This is The View from 22 from The Spectator. Subscribe from just £1 a week at spectator.co.uk.
Welcome to A View from 22 special about the Conservative Party's manifesto launch. I'm Fraser Nelson, editor of The Spectator, and I'm joined by James Forsyth, our political editor, and Isabel Hardman, our assistant editor, who are both back fresh off the train from Swindon. So, Isabel, what did you make of the launch today? Did it come across as the launch of a party that's about to win an election?
I think it was a very upbeat launch, and I think it was deliberately aimed to look as a very sort of prime ministerial launch as well. Cameron was quite... He was quite upbeat, but he wasn't as upbeat as Ed Miliband was yesterday. He had less fire in his belly when he was speaking and seemed less passionate, which I think seemed deliberate because he wanted to be a little bit more serious, a bit more prime ministerial, a little bit more restrained. But the manifesto itself was smart. It had lots of smart offers in it that voters will notice and that voters in marginal seats who will swing the election will notice as well.
James, what did you think of the tone of the event? I mean, the Conservatives have... plenty cause for panic given their failure to pull ahead in the polls. Could panic be detected in today's event?
No, I don't think so. The theme was deliberately upbeat. There were no direct references to Ed Miliband. It was all very much, this is what the Conservatives will do to make your life better. Kind of life's better under the Conservatives. One of the things, though, that was new today, apart from the policies tonally, was the emphasis on Islamist extremism. The speaker before David Cameron was Theresa May, who spoke about that, and then David Cameron referenced that in his speech and quite a lot in the question and answer session with journalists afterwards. I think that's because this is a new bit of security that the Tories are trying to inject into this election campaign. They're trying to say, it's a dangerous world out there. There are threats at home and abroad. You know, who do you want on that wall, David Cameron or Ed Miliband?
I suppose that's slightly undermined by the fact that they haven't got in their manifesto a commitment to maintain defence spending at 2% of GDP. But the only reason they can get away with that is that Labour wouldn't pledge to do that either. So the only party that is pledging to do it is UKIP.
Yeah, So it's interesting to see David Cameron was comparing the Islamist battle to World War II, effectively. I mean, really ramping up the rhetoric there. But this is because security is one of the themes.
And there's a striking thing in the manifesto. It's just one sentence where it says... We'll come up with a programme to counter the infiltration of schools and public services by extremists. It's obviously a reference to the Trojan horse scandal in Birmingham. But again, at times, David Cameron has kind of shied away from what he views as that kind of rather neocon rhetoric about that kind of thing. I think it's very interesting that he's chosen to do this, and they're choosing to put... Theresa May spoke... after George Osborne, this Islamist extremism threat point was regarded as more important than the economy in the build-up to the Cameron speech, which I think was very telling.
So, Isabel, you said there were a few smart ideas in the manifesto. Can you give us an example of one?
Well, I think the main one that a lot of voters will notice is childcare. So the Tories are pledging to double the number of free hours of childcare a week that parents of 3 and 4 year olds get, from 15 to 30, which is a big policy that obviously if you're a parent of a child that age you'll notice, but if you're a grandparent and you're involved in childcare you'll notice that too. If you are
grandparents, vote Tory and don't be bothered by your kids, ask you to look after your grandkids.
Enjoy your pensions now. But actually it's the sort of thing that will cut through to a lot of different groups, even if they don't have children of that age. It may be the parents who've been through the childcare experience think it's a good idea, just from the point of view of other parents who don't have to go through the huge fees that they have to pay, who know how difficult it is to take on more hours at work as their children get a little bit older. So I think that one will have a lot of cut through. I think politically, the one that will cause a good row that the Tories will benefit from is extending the right to buy to housing associations. Even though there are some very valid policy objections to this, as in the 1980s, they melt into comparison to the politics of it, which is that you're giving people on their incomes the opportunity to buy their own home. And if Labour are, as they are doing today, arguing against that, housing association tenants will hear the Labour Party saying, you can't buy your own home, and that's what the Tories are hoping for.
So James, there's 1.3 million people who will qualify for this proposal, that they can buy their own house from the housing association. They would get effectively a capital gains windfall of anything up to £100,000. Does this mean there's now going to be 1.3 million more people with a good reason to vote Tory?
Well, there are. Well, I think one of the things that's quite striking about this is that even critics of the policy think that about 150,000 people will take it up pretty much straight away. And those people clearly have been given a retail offer. If the 2010 Tory manifesto was called an invitation to join the government of Britain, it was a very abstract thing. Today was full of kind of concrete, and the last few days have been full of concrete retail offers. You know, pass your family home to your kids, on to your kids tax-free, your commuter rail fare frozen, as Isabel said, more childcare, if you live in a housing association property, the right to buy your own home, and a tax cut for everyone earning under 100 grand by promising to uprate the income tax-free allowance in line with the minimum wage or inflation, whichever's highest.
Mm-hmm. I think the contrast with the previous manifesto is so strong. So previously it was that weird title, as you said, the invitation to join the government of Britain, which everyone thought was completely bonkers, and they were thinking, well, actually, we elect you to do the governing. We don't want to join the government. We don't want to be transport minister. Actually, this manifesto, within a few pages, said, we have a plan for you and your family at every stage of your life, and it went through those stages. So it was saying, we're interested in you as voters, rather than sort of faffing around suggesting that you're somehow going to be in government as a voter.
At the end, David Cameron did his kind of Notting Hill speech. I'm just a prime minister standing in front of you, an electorate, asking you to re-elect me. And he said, I stood on this stage 5 years ago and I asked you to give me a chance. I'm now asking you to give me another chance. And I remember thinking, he said a stage very much like this. It wasn't at all like that. It was at Battersea Power Station. It was incredibly glitzy. There were lots of people in T-shirts. Everyone looked really cool. That we had kind of funky little bacon sandwich canapes. Today, it was much more belt and braces. It was tea and digestive biscuits. It was a much more austere backdrop. You know, this is politics without the frills. They're not trying to win awards for style in this campaign. What they're trying to do is communicate, as Isabel said, just a clear retail offer to voters. You know, vote for us and this is what you get. I think they've been handed a massive advantage by the Labour Party yesterday, who, having run, I think, quite an effective campaign up to now, made the first big strategic mistake of his campaign on Monday, which was to put fiscal responsibility and dealing with the deficit as the first page of their manifesto and ask us to look at them through that prism. Because I don't think, with just a couple of weeks to go to polling day, Labour are going to convince anyone that if you're really worried about the public finances, you're going to vote Labour. By raising the salience of that issue, I think they've played right into the Tories' hands.
But Isabel, this is a change in direction from the Conservatives. I mean, only a few weeks ago, David Cameron was trying to work out, do we really need to give retail offers for this manifesto? Isn't it enough to say we're going to be secure in general, that you can trust us in general? Do I really have to give you five things I'm going to do for you if you vote for me again? Obviously, they've decided, yes, we do have to go down this retail offer and to come up with offers for parents, offers for housing association tenants, offers for minimum wage workers. But is there time to persuade all of these people that the Conservative Party, who hitherto has not been saying very much in that direction, is now the party that's going to make their lives better in all of the ways that they outline?
Well, I think this is the big thing for the Conservatives, that they need to convince voters that they are not the party of the rich, they're the party for the workers, and that's what they were trying to do today. But as you say, it's quite a big task, in the same way as Labour are trying to convince voters that they're fiscally responsible. I think they get away with the retail offers with unfunded spending pledges because voters trust them on the economy. So when they say, we're going to spend £8 billion on the NHS, voters think, well, they probably will, because we think that they're competent on the economy. Whereas if Labour said that, voters would be very sceptical. And this is Labour's mistake, is to think that they can chase after the Tories on that unfunded pledge with their line, you can't fund the NHS with an IOU. Well, voters clearly think that the Tories will fund it, so it doesn't really carry as a message.
It was Linton Crosby, the Australian's campaign director, who introduced into British politics this phrase, you can't fatten the pig on market day. But I think there is a difference, which is when you're in government, you can point to things that you've done. And lots of the things the Tories are talking about are continuations of their policies, which I think does give them more credence. So on childcare, it's taking the number of free hours from 15 to 30. On the tax-free allowance, they've raised it by about £4,000 in this parliament. It's raising it by another £2,500.
That was a Lib Dem policy, though, wasn't it?
Yes, which the Tories have completely and utterly stolen. I mean, it's shameless. They've nicked it. They've nabbed it.
And
the whole point of this law, which they've introduced today, is, as one Tory mentioned to me, which is people think the minimum wage is a Labour issue, but people think tax is a Tory issue. So by linking the tax and the minimum wage, they make it easier for the Tories to take ownership, and they write the Lib Dems out of the script.
Well, I think the challenge for the Conservatives now, we've had the manifesto from Labour, we've had the manifesto from the Tories, now it boils down to whether you can convince those swing voters in those marginal seats that you actually care about them. And what does that involve? That involves a ground war. Now, we know that Labour historically are much better at the ground war than the Conservatives. Labour have still been very sophisticated in marginal seats with their ground war. And so it may boil down to people knocking on doors and making contact with voters and making sure they're bringing the right messages over. I think the Tories are going out with a slightly stronger message, but Labour were pretty upbeat yesterday as well. So I think that they both feel up for this fight now.
For what it's worth, the Labour HQ think that their ground game is worth 20 seats to them, because it is so much better than the Tories. And the contact rates in these Ashcroft polls, when they ask people if they've heard from either the Labour or the Tories, do suggest that Labour are doing a better job of knocking on doors and speaking to voters. I would say one thing, though. I think last week the Tory campaign had a wobble. They were knocked off their stride by Labour's non-dom announcement that was very clever. Then there was the whole, as Isabel called it, the whole dead cat strategy of Michael Fallon talking about Emma Miliband being a backstabber, which did succeed in moving the conversation on from non-doms, but drew a kind of sucking in of teeth from the punditocracy about whether this was a bit in the gutter. But I think the Tories have had a much better last few days. And I think they're on the I thought today you sensed a kind of confidence had got back into them. I think the crucial thing for them to do now, though, is to get David Cameron out. The Tories keep talking about this being the 92 campaign. They need to take a leaf out of that book and get David Cameron out on a soapbox among the people, because I think what the country wants to do is they want to see that David Cameron's not too posh to push. They want to see that he really wants this. And also, I think Cameron was better in the questions than he was in the speech, because he needs to feed off some kind of connection with an audience. And if you have him in these very sterile aircraft hangars with a kind of group of shipped-in activists, it doesn't quite work. I think he needs those real interactions with people. I remember back in 2005 when he was running for the Tory leadership. I think one of the moments when he seized it was he went and did a radio interview, and there was that whole furore about whether he'd done drugs or not. And he came out of the studio, and there was a large black chap there who came and gave him a hug, and Cameron seemed incredibly comfortable with this. And I think it summed up the point that he was a new kind of conservative, that it looked so natural. And I think that was one of the changing moments of that 2005 leadership campaign. He needs to trust in that, in his personal connection, and get out there a bit more.
So he needs to go to the country and prepare to be hugged.
Indeed. Or prepare to be pelted with eggs. I think the country wouldn't mind seeing that either. But I think the country want to see that he wants it. They want to see him say, look, I really do want to be your Prime Minister again.
Because I think over the past 2 days, Ed Miliband has looked more like he really, really wants the job than Cameron. Rightly or not, Ed looks more excited by the fight than Cameron does.
Well, let's see how that fight pans out. Thank you both. And anybody wanting to subscribe to The Spectator, the world's greatest magazine, can do so by going to www.
The Tories aren't offering you in their manifesto is a free subscription.
Well, that way, the life is not going to get better for this country until more people start to read The Spectator, which you can do £6 for 6 full weeks, full internet coverage, full digital facilities, and 6 wonderful magazines. At spectator.co.uk/election.